Okay. Welcome to the House Transportation Finance Committee, and
how you doing?
Want to welcome everybody. I'm Representative Frank Hornstein. We have three bills on our agenda today. The first two are from Chairman Earhart, and we're going to vote on the first one, and the second one we don't have a fiscal note for, so we're going to hear that one and move that out probably next week. And then our third bill, the Dorholt bill, we'll also lay that one over, but we're going to have testimony. So with that, Representative Earhart, House File 2231.
I would like to move the bill so we can talk about it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Earhart moves House File 2231, and I believe that one is going to taxes next.
Yes.
So the motion will be to re-refer to taxes. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. This bill is proposed to so that we can make sure the Met Council has sufficient monies to do their capital expenditures on buses and rail cars and other things that they need capital money for. To give them the authority to do it, we don't have to bond. We don't have to go to a majority. We only need a majority on these bonds, and we have Judge Shetman here from the Met Council to explain the what I haven't explained.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shetman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Chair. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to discuss House File 2231, which is our annual request related to the regional transit capital bonds. This bill is a little bit different this year because in previous years we've sought authorization for 1 year's worth of bonds. This year we're seeking authorization for 2 years for both calendar year 2014 and calendar year 2015. You will see in the bill that we are making the requests exclusive of each year. We're asking for $37 million in 2014 and $38.3 million in 2015. One other change to this bill that that I'd like to point out is that we have adjusted the amount for inflation, which we have not done in previous years. And the reason why we are pursuing the adjustment for inflation is because going back to 2003, we had always made a adjustment of 1% in order to just gradually grow that amount for the for our regional transit capital purposes. However, we're finding now that we our 1% growth is not keeping up with inflation, and we are actually losing buying power with that amount of funding. So we're not asking to go back. We're just asking to apply that moving forward. And the other point I'd like to make is that this this amount of authorization and the debt that we issue in order to pay for these bonds is managed as part of the council's overall property tax levy. So this is not just exclusive. The property tax levy is just not exclusive to the regional transit capital bonds. One thing that I would also like to mention is that these bonds are not just for Metro Transit. They also supply the fleet relief for Metro Mobility, the suburban transit providers, and the Dial-A-Ride programs throughout the entire metropolitan area. So this is for all metropolitan area transit vehicles. And the suburban transit providers, they're not here today, but they also are 100% supportive of this bill as well. And I know Representative Holberg often asks me, how much authority do we have on hand? Currently, we have $89 million dollars worth of authority in hand. However, $81 million of that has been encumbered. And the reason why we seek these bonds is because we have to have the authority in hand before we can enter into a contract. And so in order to do that, we have to get the authority from the legislature in order to order our buses, fleet for all the different providers. And then once we receive those, we actually issue those bonds. And since this goes back to the 90s when we started getting approval from the legislature, we are constantly retiring debt as well. So, again, this is an annual request we make to the legislature with those couple changes. But, again, I want to make sure that the committee knows that what we're asking for in 2015 is exclusive of what we're asking for in 2014. And we're doing that because it just allows us additional ability to plan for our capital purposes. And so I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. You're not off the hook because Representative Holberg has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't get a packet for this bill, and so I'm just seeing this now. Representative Howe moved it. So could two questions. One is the request. Generally, you're able to provide us with a list of the amount and, you know, where those encumbrances are in the 81 of the 89 million, and then you're planning for the additional ones. And I've just seen this. I don't know if there was another document in the packet for that bill that actually shows what you're going to use your two-year, you know, what your plans are for the money. But I misunderstood or didn't hear correctly your comment about the combination of transit taxing district revenue versus general revenue. Could you state what your point was about that again and maybe expound on it?
Sure.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, regarding the how we pay the debt service for these bonds is through the council's regional property tax. And we also, through that regional property tax, we finance our regional administration operations. We levy for the livable communities account. And so when we manage this as part of an overall property tax levy, and I just wanted the committee to know that we don't levy specifically for these bonds exclusively. They're part of our overall property tax levy that goes out to the metropolitan area taxpayer.
And Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, so then do you have additional authority under the transit taxing district for additional bonding that you use that money for?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, what we receive for transit capital purposes is authorized by the legislature.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, are you using that money straight as cash, or are you encumbering transit taxing district for capital purposes money for bonding as well?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to ask our finance director to come down and answer that question so you get the real answer on that one. I'm not exactly
and
sure.
If I might, I'm curious off the top of your head, is there any provision for any of this bonding to go to the Southwest Corridor?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I can speak to that, and no, there is not. To the Southwest rail line is what I'm assuming you're asking about. The Southwest Transit, which is a opt-out provider, will be receiving funds out of this in order to replace fleet, upgrade some of their facilities. But the rail line, the Southwest rail line, will not be receiving using any of this money to pay for that project.
And, Mr. Chair, was it included in any of your planning numbers for the next 2 years of bonding authority in coming up with your total request
and
for your authority?
Mr. Shetland. Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it does not.
All right, thank you.
Here's Ms. Bogie.
Hey, Ms. Bogie, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and title for our record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mary Bogie, Chief Financial Officer of the Met Council. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I think the question was, how do we issue our bonds versus our cash flow for our bonds?
Mr. Chair, if I might clarify.
Representative Holberg.
Is the revenue from the capital transit taxing district the subset of the seven county metro area that's been in place since, I believe, 72? The revenues generated from that area of the seven county metro area, are they used to pay for bonds?
Ms. Bogie.
Mr. Chair. Yes, those are paid for bonds. So there's two parts to our levy. One is the general purposes across the metro, and then there's the transit taxing district. Those in the transit taxing area or district are related to our transit bonds, correct? And so, yes, those revenues are used to pay the debt service on the bonds that we issue for our transit capital program.
Well,
Representative Holbert.
Now I'm really confused because I heard Mr. Shetland say that the authority in the bill here today was being paid for by your general seven county wide levy.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, my point was that what we levy as far as the transit debt service is within those cities that are in the transit capital levy communities, but that's part of our overall levy that goes out to the full seven counties. It's just those communities and the residents who live within that subset pay for that debt service for these bonds.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I misunderstood your original.
I apologize.
Because I thought that that's what it was, so I was surprised at the change in policy and that you were using a seven-county metro-wide levy for the transit capital bonds.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I apologize. I wasn't clear about that. I do have a map of those transit capital communities if you'd like to see them.
Mr.
as well.
Chair, I think many of us are really aware of that boundary.
I think so.
Especially in Lakeville and Anoka County.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first appointment today was with a high school student who depends on the bus as her form of transportation, and so I was commenting on how we sort of work to improve it, and she said, well, I just wish, she said, when the bus breaks down, I just wish they had a faster response. There's nobody who responds immediately to fix the bus, so I thought, buses are replaced on fixed schedules aligned with FTA guidelines. This high school student has a real understanding of what happens mm-hmm. to her schedule when the bus breaks down. Question, do all parts of the system have replacement schedules that are identical, that we're replacing all of the buses on the same kind of schedule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, yes, they do, but it varies from the type of vehicle that's mm-hmm. being replaced. Say one of our Metro Mobility vehicles is different than one of our regular 40-foot, you know, regular bus that you're going to see running around the Capitol versus one of our commuter opt-out provider type suburban transit bus. They all are on a schedule, but it's just kind of dependent on what the vehicle is.
And Mr. Chair, if can those who contract with you to run their own service, can they contract a different time replacement schedule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I think I should get back to you on that one. The ones that we contract with, like Maple Grove Transit, Metro Transit provides that service through a contract for Maple Grove. They would be using a similar type bus that we have in our system, so I think they're pretty consistent from provider to provider. Yeah. And Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman,
Yes,
the council manages and owns the fleet. We provide that to each of the providers, so they are all on a consistent schedule. It just, again, depends on the type of vehicle that we are replacing.
Thank you. Are there any other questions of the committee? If not, Representative Earhart renews his motion that House File 2231 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. You're on your way to the Tax Committee, Representative Earhart. You can stay there because we have House File 1796. And I believe you have an amendment as well, Representative Earhart. So we're going to move this bill to Ways and Means. Why don't you explain your amendment, and then we'll incorporate that and move the bill.
Mr. Chair,
Holberg, I'm sorry.
If I might, I don't see a fiscal note on this in our
right,
packet.
Right, so I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we're actually, thank you for that, we're not going to move the bill today. We're not going to vote on it, but the bill will be moved to Ways and Means. We're not going to vote on this bill without a fiscal note. So I'll just be a little clearer on that, Representative Holberg. We're going to lay the bill over until the fiscal note comes. So the motion will be to lay over House File 1796, but I wanted the committee to know that it's eventually going to Ways and Means. Representative Earhart, do you want to explain your amendment? And we actually can move to incorporate that, even though we're laying the bill over.
Mr. Chairman and members, this was created, and I'm going to have Matt Burris explain it because this is the first I've seen of it.
Okay. Do you know so who is bringing this amendment?
It regards the resolution of the speeds that were in here. I believe Mr. Burris is that
okay.
correct?
Mr. Burris, do you want to walk us quickly through the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, the A7 amendment removes a couple of provisions and replaces it with similar but modified language. And this is around the speed limits in work zones. One of the sections being removed under the amendment establishes essentially a statutory default speed limit in some work zones of 45 miles per hour. That's recreated in the amendment in lines 1.5 to 1.18 with a few modifications as to when the 45 mile per hour limit would be in effect. The second piece of the amendment is to modify the situations under which a work zone speed limit can be established by a road authority without doing an engineering and traffic study. Typically, speed limits are set following an engineering study. Under current law, there's authority for road authorities, so MnDOT, counties, and cities, to set a lower limit with some restrictions that doesn't require that study, and it's for work zones when workers are present. The amendment modifies the scenarios, essentially, under which that workers' present speed limit can be set without an engineering study.
Okay. Are there any questions on the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I forgot to mention there's also a modification made to a report that's required of MnDOT on work zone safety, and the change, this is on the amendment on 2.34, the change is to limit the report to just 3 years.
Okay. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, I just, after they're done with the presentation, would like to hear from MnDOT and have a couple questions for them.
Right. Thank you for that. I think this language does come in response to some of their concerns that were raised in the Transportation Policy Committee. So, okay. So what we're going to do now, members, is just incorporate this amendment into the bill. And as I said, we are laying this bill over, but we're going to incorporate the amendment. So is there any discussion to the A7 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. The A7 amendment is now incorporated into the House file. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has grown out of the increasing casualties we have in the work zone of workers because of distracted driving. That's the easiest way to put it. Whatever the distraction be, there happens to be cell phones that are causing, according to National Safety Council, the latest figures were 2011. They estimate that 21% of 1.1 million crashes were involved in taking talking on handheld and hands-free phones. Another 4% were involved in text messaging. So about 25% is involved in the use of cell phones. That was one of the items that we talked about, but earlier as a matter of fact, last in October of 2011, I think that's correct, there were two people killed that were part of the Egan Company's workforce in a work zone, Ron Rakowski and Craig Carlson. We had their widows testify when this was introduced, and I don't believe they're here today, but it was one of those things that it was a sad moment in their lives, and we want to do what we can about preventing further problems with distracted driving, and one of those very important items is phone use in the work zone. I also have an item with speed, which we're also addressing here. A group was formed last summer that met frequently, four, five, six times, to look at the various aspects of this. There were members of the MnDOT State Patrol, State of Minnesota Work Zone Safety Committee, University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Study, cities and counties, contractors, union representative, and transportation safety advocates. And they met five, six times, whatever it was, to try and thrash out the differences, because there were some differences. And one of them was whether or not we should have cameras in the zone. And we kept hearing Mary Liz say, Representative Hulberg say, are you sure you want to do this? Faintly, that would come floating into the room when we talked about photo cameras. And so we decided to eliminate that at the last meeting of the, what committee was that? That was the, the policy committee.
Your committee, probably.
Yeah, probably. So we did eliminate the photocop ID, the State Patrol and other law enforcement were concerned about that. So we now have, and I'm going to ask, first of all, I wanted to mention that work zones in some of the states are getting very severe penalties laid on them. Work zones in Michigan, their signage says injure or kill a worker $7,500 and 15 years in jail. And I think there was one other state that has
Illinois
has one 10,000 fine and 1 year in jail for the same type of offense. Now, we didn't get quite that severe, but we did increase fines both on speeding and on the flaggers that handle the traffic through those zones in violation of those. People drive right through the zones without paying any attention to the flagger sometimes, and that seems to be also not a worthwhile when you come over the hill and you see the traffic coming one way and the other in the other zone in your lane. So we decided to include them as a finable incident. We moved the I think it's still a flat rate, although I'm not sure after the amendment. So, and we prohibit cell phone use in the work zones and when workers are present. I think that was one of the qualifications we put in there. There was an interesting article which was in your packet that talks about driving and talking on a cell phone is a surprisingly tricky task. I'm sorry that Representative Anderson is in here because he has some things about multitasking, and they talk about that in this article. He's a pilot. He's a trained pilot, and he multitasks all the time. But, of course, he has no cement barriers in the sky, and he has no one flagging, so he's free to do that, I guess, and we won't say anything about that. Except that if you read the article, you'll find out that your mind is occupied even when you're listening to the radio in the car, and that's also a distraction. But we're not going there with the radios. We'll let you listen to the radio. So I'm going to call Mr. Werke to explain more about this.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Werke. Please state your name for the record and title.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. The bill in front of you is, as Chairman Earhart explained, a fairly comprehensive approach to resetting how we think about and manage construction work zone safety in Minnesota, and was not prepared without a lot of discussion amongst practitioners and experts and activists and others affected parties in the field. We believe it is a very, very good step towards making construction work zones safer. I can provide you with firsthand accounts and knowledge and testimony today from our construction members whose workforces are exposed to all manner and fashion of risk every day when they're out there in these construction work zones. In particular, the scopes of work that involve workers who are right out on the fog line or on the edge line without any positive barrier protection, that are doing tasks like bituminous paving, concrete repair, those types of things. And in particular, our concern is that when you enter a construction work zone, you're entering a physically altered, lots of times changed driving condition. And we believe that that, if anywhere on the roadway, demands the driver to have 100% attention upon what they're doing. And so we think some of these measures, in particular the preclusion from being on a cell phone, is a particular benefit to the safety of those workers. The other thing that I will say in the interest of time is that the fine approach that Chairman Earhart didn't delve into, I think you'll hear, if you ask from MnDOT and other enforcement and administrative professionals, that the current standard that's posted, fines double in work zones, has lost its attention grabbing capacity for the driver. No one understands what their fine is going to be. All they know is it's going to be double of what they were assessed. Is that going to be $35 or $300 or $3,000? No one really knows. The standard that's moving in the industry is to a posted high minimum fine that alerts the driver that if you are speeding, this is what your fine will be. And as Chairman Earhart indicated, other states have gone to what I think are much more severe penalties actually for hitting a worker or for speeding. We think this is a step in the right direction. And I want to commend the folks who have worked with us from the patrol and from MnDOT for working on this product that's in front of you. And I think in the interest of time, the best thing to do would just be to take questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Werke. Are there questions of Mr. Werke or Representative Earhart? Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I stepped out, but I think the author was asked what happened to the issue of the camera enforcement. And my understanding is you said...
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Houseman, there was a lot of conversation with law enforcement of all varieties, and they did not like that idea for a number of reasons, and so we acquiesced to the mighty arm of the law and said we will remove that from the bill, which we did.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I could check with Mr. Werke, it sounds like you've done some comparison of other states. You know, my sense is all of our signage, all of our speed limits aren't helping people follow the law. Are there other states that have used another technology that protects workers to a greater degree, like a camera?
Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, I'm probably not the best national data expert to ask that question to. I know there are other states in different jurisdictions for different types of violations that are using automated enforcement. And in fact, I just saw a report on the national news the other night that is moving back and forth between whether or not that's a valid policy approach or whether or not it deserves rethinking. I would just say, as Chairman Earhart alluded to, that we did consider that discussion. I think you will get a difference of opinion amongst folks that would come up to testify on automated enforcement. I think divided opinion would say that an automated enforcement approach would have the best possibility of changing driver behavior. But I think there are others that would say that its implementation is problematic and costly and a host of other concerns about it. We decided as a group that it would be best to not include something like that in the bill because of the fact that we would like to see some positive movement on this year. Chairman Earhart asked to have something put in to have a discussion in his policy committee, and hence the action to remove it.
Representative Houseman.
Just one concluding comment. I mean, the frustration, of course, is we are, I mean, this is before us because we want to save lives of the workers. And if I had the sense that we could afford to put a state patrol officer at every work site or a local police officer or whatever, but we don't. And so then how do we enforce? And that's what motorists know. That there's, you know, we can't afford to put an officer at every site, so what do we do? We don't have any enforcement. And I think that's why people break the law then.
Mr. Werke, briefly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, one of the things that we didn't cover in the bill is you're absolutely right. Enforcement has a very high return on changing driver behavior. What we do in this bill is we create a special revenue fund at MnDOT, and we take and direct the fines that are assessed off of the change in the speed limit here, and we direct those fines to MnDOT for two purposes. Number one is to help support additional automated direct enforcement by patrol officers and other peace officers in the work zone. And the second piece is to fund a statewide work zone safety awareness campaign. So we do recognize that enforcement, active enforcement, has a benefit, and we try to support it through the fine structure in the bill.
Thank you. I'm going to call on Representative Benson for the last question. So, members, Representative Dean, it's brief because we're going to be laying this bill over. We can continue the discussion, as I mentioned to the members that weren't here earlier. Because there's no fiscal note, we're not going to move this bill out of the committee until we see that fiscal note. I understand it will be prepared and ready tomorrow. So it would be my intention to continue this hearing tomorrow. So if members can hold their questions, we can continue the discussion. But I'm going to, since we have Representative Benson, Representative Dean on the list, we're going to have their questions, and then we're going to continue the hearing tomorrow. So Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe this would be one possibly for our state patrol, but potentially you could answer that. I'm trying to understand a little bit more in terms of the idea of somebody violating a flagger's instructions, for example, on this issue of the peace officer may stop and issue a citation to a driver of a motor vehicle if the peace officer has probable cause to believe that the vehicle driver has operated the vehicle in violation within the past 4 hours. And I guess I'm trying to understand if the police officer doesn't have not seen, you know, visually, is he going to be relying on the flagger to take a license plates number and you know, the whole idea of a 4 hour? Just help me with that a little bit.
Mr. Werke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, that's correct. I believe the current protocol is that a peace officer needs to witness the violation. And what we heard dramatically from our members that the most dangerous situation you can have in construction is being a flagger. And when flagger violations occur, that vehicle is traveling now into the work zone where workers believe that vehicle was going to be slowed down or stopped. And if a description of that vehicle is provided, et cetera, the enforcement officer has, in my understanding, has very little, if no option, to be able to issue a citation. This approach in the bill mirrors, I believe, what is being done in the school bus stop arm provision of law, which is if you witness the violation and you have an apt description of the violator and their vehicle, that a peace officer then has an opportunity to fine that person. We're also making that fine commensurate with the fine for speeding that we establish in the law, because currently that fine is of a lower value.
Representative Benson, very briefly.
Yeah, well, just determination on the 4 hours, I guess, would be the only other thing that I'd like to get clarification. So they, I mean, easily the flagger tells the boss tells the state police, they run the plates, you know, so help me understand the 4 hour. I mean, it could be longer, it could be shorter. I'm just trying to understand. We're putting into law that it's 4 hours is all.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, I don't feel that I should answer that question. I think if I would suggest that if there's going to be more testimony tomorrow, that maybe the patrol could answer
yeah.
that question.
We'll hear from MnDOT and the State Patrol tomorrow. I'm going to take Representative Dean. Representative Holberg, I know you had asked when we did the amendment, you wanted some issues clarified by MnDOT. Can you hold on till tomorrow?
But certainly.
I'm happy to accommodate
no,
you
no,
if you want
I'm
to
certain.
Today. Okay.
That's good.
So the last question is Representative Dean. No?
I'll wait till tomorrow.
Okay. So, members, we are going to continue this hearing tomorrow with our fiscal, and I understand that will be available to us. And so with that, I'm going to lay over this bill till tomorrow. House File 1796 is laid over. Our last bill for today is House File 1480. Is Representative Dorholt here? Okay. Here's how I want to handle this, members. This is... we're not going to be taking action on this bill. We have a number of people that have traveled from out of town, and I want to make sure they're accommodated. We have session at noon, so this hearing is going to end at quarter to 12. And so I know there's a lot of testifiers, and you know, I'm going to be cutting people off if your testimony meanders on past 3 or 4 minutes. I'm just giving people a heads up, all of you that are testifying, because we want Representative Dorholt to briefly pose this bill. And and members, just a little context. We are hearing this bill because this issue of truck weights is important to many people on both sides of the issue. It's sort of a right of... I think Representative Beard and Representative Holberg will know that we can't really go through a biennium without a hearing like this. So...
you can always just say no.
Yeah, well, that's true as well. But there is enough interest in this bill that we want to accommodate the people on both sides. Before we do that, so again, time certain, quarter to 12, we're done. We're not continuing this hearing tomorrow. So that's just a heads up to the testifiers. You must be brief. We are going to, we have several minutes that we want to approve before Representative Dorholt takes the stage. And Representative Bernardi.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the passing of the minutes for February 26th, February 27th, March 4th, and March 5th.
February 26th, February 27th, March 4th, March 5th. These are the minutes for our committee. Is there discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Dorholt. If you want to briefly go through your bill, and then we're going to take just under an hour's worth of testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much for hearing this. Are we hearing? I'm not on.
Okay. You know, actually, so the motion is, I'll move this, the motion is that House File 1480 is going to be heard and laid over in this committee.
All right. Well, I appreciate the hearing for HF 1480, the House's version of the truck's omnibus weight bill from last year. I know this is controversial, and I don't intend to bring controversy, but I do intend to bring a conversation about something that's very important to folks in my area. So raising truck limits from 80,000 to 97,000 pounds is the question. You're going to hear, you know, obviously, testimony on both sides. So I just want to go through a few basic points. We call this the Better Trucks Initiative because when you look at the statistics from the 198-page report from MnDOT, this is two-sided, by the way, you'll see that trucks, a few points, trucks are not going to increase in length but in efficiency. Trucks with more axles do less damage to roads, according to this report, not more, even with higher loads. Trucks with more brakes have substantially more braking power than five-axle trucks. For example, because I like physics and statistics, fully loaded six-axle semi-truck is 22% surplus brake capacity compared to a five-axle semi at 80,000 pounds, that's 10%. You move to a seven-axle semi with this braking power, 30% surplus. Just some numbers to point out. some safety concerns that people might bring up here today.
Yeah.
There is a concern with bridges. You'll hear about that. Newer bridges that are built to a 10-ton standard are not a problem. And according to the MnDOT report, concrete bridges are much less likely to cause a problem. But some older steel bridges and thousands of wooden piling bridges in the state are a problem. So I reminded that the fees for these licenses would go to bridge inspections. Not only should six and seven axle trucks not be on those bridges, we understand that, but neither should five axle trucks, and I know you've heard about that, where you have counties, places where you can't even get trucks in and out until they cut their load in half because of these bridges. So we are very aware of that problem. We even provide for an increase in the frequency of bridge inspections in the state and provide more posting of older bridges. That's what the revenues from the permits would do. The legislature has responded to this problem in the past with exemptions for some agricultural and timber loads. So these trucks are driving in parts of Minnesota. We have some lovely carve-outs that benefit some, but not all. While our opposition will complain about some dangerous heavy trucks, they will present, I'm hoping they will present some evidence to support their claims. Minnesota has allowed 90,000 and 97,000 loads for over a decade now, and so far I've yet seen the evidence of more accidents from these configurations. So I'm going to sign over short on time, and I'd like to move on with testimony.
Okay.
Because you're going to hear from people who have much more experience than I do. You'll hear especially a specific problem with smaller companies getting their loads on trains. As we know, they're busy. It's difficult, especially in central Minnesota right now.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Dorholt. We'll go directly to the testimony because that's really the purpose here, is to allow people who have a passion for this issue to testify before our committee. And I've calculated about 5 minutes each. We've got 55 minutes, and we've got 11 testifiers. So at the five-minute mark, I'm just going to say thank you very much, and we'll move on, because it's just not fair for people who are down on the list and won't have a chance to testify because people ahead of you are taking too much time. So everyone will get 5 minutes. If you can stay below 5 minutes, all the better. But we are going to gavel this meeting to a close at 11:45. So our first testifier is Mr. Fred Corrigan, Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and title. And
thank
you'll
you,
have
Chair.
Until approximately 10:55.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Fred Corrigan. I'm Executive Director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. We appreciate the opportunity for you to hear this bill today. And the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association was involved with, along with about 130 other groups in the MnDOT truck weight study, and supports the recommendations of the study. Our members are increasingly having to haul aggregates longer distance to ensure quality aggregates for ready mix concrete. The configurations you are discussing today allow our members to bring unprocessed aggregates to ready mix plants and job sites across Minnesota, and would reduce the trips these plants and jobs to serving these plants and job sites by as much as 30%. This legislation does not include ready mix mixer trucks. This is simply legislation that allows semi trucks to make these deliveries to these plants and others. Authors of the legislation encouraged us to approach this bill as a policy change rather than seeking another exemption, and to build a freight coalition to support the bill, and we appreciate Representative Dorholt's leadership in this area. Most of these loads, if not all of these loads, have no rail alternative. There is no other way to move this product between the source of these products and the job sites that they need to go to. So you may hear some comments about rail. Rail is not an option with most of these and many of these projects that you're going to hear today. You're also going to hear something about a federal study being done, and we believe that the federal study is looking at longer, larger trucks than what this legislation deals with. And unfortunately, you're having to deal with this issue because Congress has been unable to deal with this issue. And state after state after state across the union are dealing with truck weight issues because Congress is unable to deal with it. Permits. These trucks are required to have an annual permit. Currently, there are more than 1,500 permits issued in Minnesota for unprocessed agricultural products and timber products. These permits are annual permits issued by the state and allow local jurisdictions to also issue annual permits. $300 per year for a six-axle truck and $500 per year for a seven-axle truck. The permit fees from these state permits are dedicated to local bridge inspections and posting costs on local bridge systems. MnDOT can certainly tell you the schedule for completing inspections on all of the local bridges, but they're making great progress in inspecting bridges that in some cases haven't been inspected for more than 30 years. These trucks are restricted to the Minnesota 10-ton paved road system, not including the interstate system. Unlike rail cars, the state has the ability to approve or deny or revoke truck permits that abuse the conditions of the permit. Unlike rail cars, local communities have the ability to permit these trucks and the routes they take within their communities. These trucks spread their loads over more axles, resulting in less weight per axle, and are restricted to the 10-ton road system, which the legislature established in statute in 2005, resulting in less, not more, damage to roads and bridges. As some members of this committee learned last week at Min Road, road surface damage is caused primarily by freeze-thaw cycles in our extreme climate, not by truck traffic. Under safety, the MnDOT report is clear on the advantages of additional axles and braking power on these trucks, as Representative Dorholz mentioned. As opposed to rail cars, state officials have the ability to permit these vehicles and the condition of these vehicles. Opponents testifying in the Senate last year offered no evidence that these trucks are any more dangerous than trucks already on the road. And we appreciate, again, the opportunity to speak to you today. We have a number of our members here and representatives. We could go along with them.
Thank you very much for that, Mr. Corrigan. Mr. Lang, is Mr. Lang available? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my battle buddy, Jeff. How are you doing? Thank you for the opportunity to address this committee this morning. I'm Jerry Lang with Knife River Corporation, where we employ about 750 professionals throughout the state of Minnesota and about 1,100 employees in our north central region from Minnesota, Iowa, north and south Dakota. In Minnesota, we are involved in heavy trucking, heavy highway construction, asphalt paving, ready-mix concrete, operating in about 250 gravel pits and quarries throughout the state. I'm also here this morning representing the Agri Ready-Mix Association as their president this year, and I can tell you that both Knife River and ARM, Agri Ready-Mix Association, support this legislation. In Minnesota, we operate a fleet of about 295 straight trucks, 141 semis, 373 trailers, 25 hazmat trailers, and 5 hazmat tank trucks. We also hire about 150 to 200 owner-operators, depending on the workload. Plus, we are adding this year another 15 to 20 trucks and hiring additional people this year, which is great news for us in the economy. The truck numbers that I just gave you are right off the Department of Transportation Safety Measurement System website, which also lists our hours of service compliance and complete safety record, which we are very proud of. As many times it is said that a company is only as good as their record and their reputation. Our safety program, along with our driver's training program, has enabled us to maintain an average mod rate of less than 0.5 and an average incident rate of 1.5 for the past 5 years, while logging over 1 million employee hours each year. No driver goes out on their own in our company until they first complete the NRMCA, National Ready-Mix Concrete Association Mentor Driver Program, and have driven with any one of our drivers for a minimum of 1 week. Additionally, every one of our drivers complete a drive safe program twice a year. So the bottom line is, we would not support this program if we thought there were any safety risks associated with it. And we know there aren't any risks because the other three states in our region have significantly higher weight limits than Minnesota, most of them over 100,000 pounds. And that's why it's also true for the other 14 states that Knife River operates in, west of the Mississippi, where the weight limits are considerably higher. Minnesota certainly is an island in regard to the weight limits compared to the surrounding states. The fact is, Minnesota roads are built for this traffic, The trucks that we operate are built for the payloads, and the safety risks are negligible, and fact, the facts generally show that these trucks are safer and have been proven out throughout the many states that we operate in. And I would tell you that the Minnesota legislature must already agree with this as well, because you've already initiated and given the exemption for one of the districts in Minnesota to operate trucks in this manner. So believe me, the highway doesn't know what's going over the top of the surface, whether it's 96,000 pounds of sugar or sugar beets or oil or logs or aggregate going over the top of the surface. Bottom line is, we need to become more efficient. And Jason Dunnick will tell you a little bit more about that when he comes up here to testify. Right now, we all comply with the service hours of service legislation that have been imposed in all the trucking companies this past several years, where our drivers are at 60 hours, and I can tell you they max out that 60 hours every week. So we have 6 months to get the work done on our highways and our roads in Minnesota. And this is one of the ways that we can do that, increase that. Increasing the weight limits throughout this state rather than selected areas within the state, and for all the industries, to increase our efficiencies, reduce the traffic, lower our costs, and bottom line, put Minnesota on par with the surrounding states and provide cost savings to the end user. In many cases, that will be the taxpayer. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Lang. And then we have Paul Hawkinson from the Hawkinson Ready Mix. And on deck, if John Dickey could be ready, that would be really helpful.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. I'm Paul Hawkinson. My companies are Hawkinson Construction and Summit Materials. Hawkinson Construction is an asphalt paving contractor. Summit Materials is our ready mix and aggregates division. We're based out of Grand Rapids, and we cover an area and contract work with MnDOT and local counties and cities from Duluth to the Canadian border down to Mille Lacs area and as far over as Detroit Lakes. We typically have up to 20 of our own trucks running daily, which are all operated by our Teamster signed drivers. We also are hiring an additional 8 Teamsters this coming spring for the workload. Beyond that, we also typically hire an additional 20 trucks per day to help us get the materials out to where we need to do the work. In our 80 plus years working in Minnesota, we've never had a major truck accident, thanks largely to our safety training, which is both CTOT, the commercial truck operator training, and our Minner driver training program at our company. Our fleet of trucks is already configured for the proposed increased weight, and our drivers are confident they can continue our excellent safety record. Increasing truck weight simply means that more work can be done in Minnesota using fewer tax dollars. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkinson. John Dickey? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dickey.
My name is John Dickey. I represent Semstone Companies. We operate approximately 700 trucks in 6 different states: South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, North Dakota, Nebraska, as well as about 435 trucks in the state of Minnesota. We operate concrete pumps, concrete trucks, aggregate trucks, cement tankers, black trucks, as well as contractor supply equipment. We have approximately 242 Teamsters, approximately 50 operating engineers, approximately 190 non-bargaining unit employees. For 2014, I'm planning on hiring approximately 35 to 40 Teamsters, as well as approximately 10 non-bargaining unit employees. In 2013, our company had approximately 188,000 incoming truck trips and approximately 113 incoming delivery into our facilities last year, with a total of 12 DOT recorded accidents total, and just the incoming and out, and that's not including the outgoing trips. Our safety training includes monthly training for all of our employees, yearly training, as well as specialized training for specific jobs such as 35W, Min Pass, St. Croix Bridge, I-694, Target Field, TCF Stadium, and MMPS Stadium. And all of our employees go through NRMCA, National Ready Mix Concrete Association, driver certification, as well as our in-house training. As a matter of fact, last evening at 9:30, I held Min Pass safety and environmental meetings with one of my Teamsters at Midway so we could pour abutments last night at Wheelock Parkway at 10 o'clock, starting at 10 o'clock, right when the XL Energy let out, and it was a complete zoo, but anyway. We also hold monthly and yearly environmental training for all of our employees. This our company supports this bill. You know, we're going to be having, as busy as this is, particularly the metro market, Class A aggregates are going to be having, we're probably going to have some problems getting material to St. Croix this fall because it's so busy in our market. So I do appreciate your time, and our companies do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dickey. Mr. Zelenka?
Right.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members, for giving us the opportunity to express ourselves. I'm Joe Lawrence with Miles Lawrence Incorporated from Southern Minnesota. We have about 50 semis, about 40 tractor trailers are of the seven axle configuration that we're talking about. We've operated those and gradually increased that number over the last 15 years throughout states in the central United States from the Canadian border to the Gulf, do kind of specialized development projects, highway projects, airports, dams, things like that as a subcontractor to many of the larger contractors in the region. With this type of vehicle, we have one of the nice benefits that's come to our company is we've reduced our insurance costs about 30% over the last 10 years as we've increased that type of vehicle. The additional braking capacity with the additional axles has made the seven axle trucks much more compatible with cars. You don't have to run over them if you don't have enough brakes or if you have enough brakes. And so this is really a great side benefit. The other thing is we have most of our employees, we have operating engineers and drivers, are from Southern Minnesota. And Southern Minnesota has become an island compared to the states around us. And it's very difficult to move enough product and be really efficient here anymore. And our guys would like to come home to work instead of up in the Bakken area or Amarillo, Texas, or somewhere in Colorado, whatever. And our outstate economy really needs us to equalize our markets compared to our neighbors. I was at a local business group meeting held by Tim Walz this spring, and a lot of the local people there asked what he could do to help them equalize opportunities for business in Southern Minnesota compared to regions around us, and this is definitely one of the things that would help do that. That's what's gained his support in this thing at the federal level. So again, I ask you to consider that. It's a kind of a no-cost general benefit to our entire economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And okay, next will be Jason Dunick, and then on deck will be Bob Zelenka. Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jason Dunick, and I'm with Dunick Companies. I'm here representing Dunick Companies today and also representing the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. In your packet is a letter of support from MAPA. Dunick has a fleet of over 40 trucks, 6 to 7 axles on each of those trucks, and we hire around 20 to 25 more to satisfy our needs each day. Our safety record is one of the best in the business, and we are very proud of that record. We haul around 1 million tons of asphalt and gravel each without a major accident in the last 20 years. We train all of our drivers in the advanced driving skills behind the wheel class at CTOT. This class consisting of approximately 1.5 hours of classroom instruction and 5 hours of behind the wheel instruction. We make the drivers aware of the vehicle and operating capacities and limitations. We do business in Minnesota, South Dakota, and Iowa. We find that these states, other than Minnesota, already have enacted the upper weight limits. In front of you is a construction document that was bid in Douglas County last month. The job is from Alexandria, Minnesota to Trunk Highway 210 on Highway 29. The bid result was about $8,750,000. I figure the savings as a result of the increased load capacity from 80,000 to 97,000 pounds with the three quantities that we are working with. Class 5 at 66,000 ton, bituminous aggregates at 140,000 ton, and millings at 79,000 tons. After calculating the increase of savings would have been about $350,000 on one job. $350,000 in savings would have been around 4.5% reduction in overall cost to that job. Dunick owns 7 ready mix plants from Redwood Falls to Glenwood. We are finding that we're hauling aggregates from pits that are further and further away from our facilities. If weight limits increase, this would be a significant cost savings to the end user. Dunick supports this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunick. Okay, Mr. Zelenka, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Bob Zelenka. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Grain and Feed Association. We represent grain elevators and feed mills in the state of Minnesota. We have facilities located in approximately 600 cities and towns around the state. About 150 locations have rail service, at least rail going by their facilities. About 50 of our grain elevators are what you call unit train loading facilities, all of which use truck. And those 50, those 100 that are, have rail going by their facility, many of them don't receive very good service. Railroads use rates to control who they want to serve, and a lot of our members have turned away from rail and have primarily and exclusively using truck. And even our shuttle loading facilities utilize truck for moving grain to and fro, also moving grain into the other marketplace, ethanol plants, soybean processing facilities, moving grain to the river, those kinds of things. We're here in support of the bill. We currently are enjoying the, since 2008, the use of moving raw and unprocessed commodities into the marketplace. A lot of our members are using six-axle vehicles, 90,000 pounds, very successfully and very efficiently. The problem we have with that is that we backhaul is a problem for us. We're taking whole soybeans into a soybean processing plant at 90,000 pounds, but we can only backhaul soybean meal at 80,000 pounds. And just, it shouldn't really matter what's under the tarp in that scenario, for example. So from our standpoint, expanding this to cover freight generally makes sense. We do support the bill. And certainly answer any questions you might have, but I know you're tight for time. So thank you very much for your time, and I encourage you to at least consider this. This is something I think that safety record proves itself. We've been doing this since 2008 very successfully and very efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next person to testify will be Tim Workey, and then on deck will be Matt Hodap.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Tim Workey with the Associated General Contractors. I'm going to be very brief. We represent the highway construction marketplace and contractors, and also the vertical marketplace. My comments are intended to have the committee think about how these issues interplay and connect, especially as it relates to transportation funding, which is a significant issue that's going to be in front of this body this year for your consideration. You heard a number of folks testify about the changes in this bill that would bring efficiencies to their operations, quantifiable, real dollar efficiencies. You're going to hear in the transportation funding discussion that word efficiencies used significantly and regularly. And a lot of times we calculate those efficiencies as user costs, savings to the general public and time and lost accidents and those kinds of things. This is a real quantifiable dollar savings. You heard Mr. Dunnick testify about his bid preparation and what those savings would accrue to. And so I'd encourage you to think about that as this bill progresses. Another issue of concern to us on this issue, in addition to the efficiencies piece, is how I guess that's the main concern for us. And as I think about it, I'd just like to leave my comments in regard to that. I think some of the other testimony speaks for itself. So thank you.
And thank you very much. Matt Hodapp. See if I got it right that time.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Matt Hodapp. I'm a state trooper here in the state. Have been for 31 and a half years and looking forward to retiring at some point. But I'll be able to scratch, or you can scratch off Lance Langford. He was unable to attend today.
Okay.
So I'll filibuster up the 10 minutes for both of us, but I'll keep it brief. I'm here in opposition to this legislation. I've spoken to this committee and as well as in the Senate as well as in Congress in the past on this issue. On a safety issue, we have a number of concerns. I heard a testifier say earlier that there's not been any discussion on whether these bigger trucks or seven-axle, six-axle trucks would in fact be any more worse off than we are today. I believe that they would be. I think there's a track record of studies out there that have shown that when you increase axles and braking, you still have the maintenance issue. And what we found across the country and in our own state is that 17 out of 100 trucks, 17% of the trucks out there are currently running illegally. Their brakes are out of adjustment. And in order to rise to that level, you'd have to have 25% of your brakes out of adjustment. To give you an idea of what this would mean, one study took a 80,000-pound semi at the speed limit, 55 miles an hour, applied all of its brakes, and all the brakes were in full adjustment. They were fully capable. And it took the length of a football field to get that vehicle stopped. Taking out 25%, or roughly about 3 of the 10 brakes, did the same thing at 55 miles an hour, and it took 3 football fields to get it stopped. That's significant. And that's just on the braking side. What about on the acceleration side? When you add this kind of weight, as they pull out from a road, and if you're bebopping down the road, which we have, unfortunately, a number of inattentive drivers out here, and they're looking ahead, they see a semi that's a half a mile down the road pulling out into the traffic lane, and if it's fully loaded, it's going to take a lot longer for that vehicle to get up to speed. And so not judging the proper speed, I believe that we're going to have more collisions and more accidents. The on the braking issue, the number of axles, you're still going to have the maintenance, the upkeep, and making sure that those vehicles are working properly. As far as the weight goes, we're not increasing the length of the vehicle, so there's nowhere for the weight to go but to build it up. Your center of gravity is going to be higher. And this is going to cause, according to one study, more likelihood of rollover, a higher propensity for the vehicles to flip. So that would be a concern. On the accident side, on the accident picture, there's one study from the USDOT that says that there, larger trucks are 11% more likely to be involved in fatal crashes. We, in Minnesota, our troopers respond to almost all fatal crashes. We have accident reconstructionists go out to the scenes of these crashes. This is dangerous for not only the public, but for the drivers themselves. I've spoke to a lot of drivers who are not in favor of increasing the size and weight of their vehicles. In Congress, the 112th Congress directed the U.S. Department of Transportation to undertake a two-year comprehensive study on size and weight. That study is about to be completed this fall, and I would urge you to consider holding off on any more size and weight until we get that study. There is a section of that that will apply to the states in looking at all the states and their size and weight laws. If we can't at least hold off until then, as far as I'm concerned, the current weights of 80,000 pounds with our current bridge system, the way it is, the infrastructure, we need to really evaluate all of the components going into ratcheting up the weights. Several years ago, when we were looking at, and in fact, the legislature did pass an exemption for certain commodities to increase their weights. My testimony then, and it's still today.
Okay, you just hit the mark. You met the mark. I didn't know it was going to beep. I've
Did
actually
I hit the
been.
5 minute mark?
Yeah, actually, you have.
So thank you, madam.
Didn't know the alarm was going to go off, but I am being fair about it. Thank you very much.
I'm a charter member of the On and On and On Club, so
okay.
I have a tendency to.
Thank you very much,
Madam Chair. Quick.
Yes.
Quick thing I have to point out.
Go ahead, Representative Dorrell.
The troopers probably have some of the toughest jobs in the state. But you have to see those numbers. The MnDOT study, which I believe they support, contradicts a lot of things you said. Right here, the results show that surplus brake capacity for all the proposed vehicle configurations is greater than the standard five-axle tractor semi-trailer, and that the stopping distance for all these vehicles will be better than the 80,000-pound tractor semi-trailer. That's according to this MnDOT study. Okay, load transfer ratio would also, this was for 108,000-pound truck, would exceed the rollover target by 57%, where an 80,000-pound exceeds the recommended value by only 35. When I first saw this bill, my reaction was, I don't want to touch that until, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit of a policy geek and read 198 pages. So I would just, I love to see the statistics people are talking about.
Okay, thank you. Okay, go ahead, Representative Mahoney.
Representative Dorrell, I just want you to know, as the longer you're here, the less of a policy geek you get to be.
Okay. Randy Malushnik. And then on deck is Ken Brown. Welcome, Commissioner. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Commissioner Ken Brown from Olmsted County cannot be here today, so we can shorten up your meeting a little bit. I'm a Carver County Commissioner, been that for 7 years, past president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and a member of the National Association of County Officials Transportation Steering Committee, where I chair the Highway and Highway Safety Committee. I'm here today to express my ardent opposition to House File 1480, which increases truck size and weight limits on Minnesota roads. The current limits have been designed to ensure Minnesota roads are safe and dependable for the hundreds of thousands of people who rely on these roads for transportation. And Madam Chair, unfortunately, here in Minnesota, we are painfully aware of the consequences of structural bridge failure. There is a considerable evidence that removing these sensible limits would result in more wear and tear on our state roads, particularly the bridges. Once again, particularly the bridges. A study by the U.S. Department in more wear and tear on our state roads, particularly the bridges. Once again, particularly the bridges. A study by the U.S. Department of Transportation found that this type of increase would require an additional $50 billion, with a B, $50 billion nationally to rebuild or strengthen our bridges. While I'm not an engineer, I have talked to enough to know that the number of axles has no effect on how much weight is going across a local bridge. One of the main arguments for the other side, by the way. In fact, I'd like to hear somebody deal with the bridge, the weight on the bridges. All the bridge feels is the total weight. Adding tons of weight on a bridge will shorten its lifespan. In fact, a new study on state bridge conditions with the Minnesota Department of Transportation data just reported several days ago in the State Tribune or Star Tribune shows that 11%, once again 11% of the state bridges are either structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, up from 7.7% just a decade ago. Can we really afford to be creating additional problems when our state budget is already stretched beyond the breaking point? I've brought with me a group letter signed by 30 county commissioners from across the state, folks from Hennepin, Houston, Clay, Anoka, and Red Counties, etc. Maintaining the current truck size and weight helps save taxpayers' local government dollars. Heavier trucks have the greatest negative impact on the condition of our bridges. Increasing the current size and weight of trucks will require more bridges in the state to be replaced, strengthened, or posted, adding new costs to both taxpayers and local governments to maintain or repair the infrastructure. My contention is that the local taxpayers cannot afford to bear this cost. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'll address any questions if you have them.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, you said you had a letter from all of those counties. Could that be distributed, please? I'd like to see.
We'll make sure of that. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Member and Madam Chair.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you. Maybe to Mr. Representative Dorholt, or let me start with Representative Dorholt, and then Commissioner Milicic can weigh in. When we permit trucks now, we actually do permit trucks now for overweight, for beets and farm commodities, forest products, and so on and so forth. They have to have extra axles, and they have to meet certain restrictions, one of which is the bridge formula. And if I'm not mistaken, and for the good of the committee, can you describe how that works? For instance, I know there's an axle weight on limit on a bridge, but there's also usually a total gross weight on a bridge. So if we issue a permit to haul, say, logs out of the forest, can a truck that's weighing 105,000 pounds actually run over a bridge that's not posted for that, or do they have to take a circuitous route to find bridges that actually comply?
Okay, Representative Dorholt.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, as you know, a lot of these things are gross weight, 80,000 pounds. You see that on a lot of bridges. You add another axle that does change the impact. It spreads the weight as some of these, looking for the right figure. The permits would go to change the signage. The real bottom line is we understand the bridge problem, and even if this were to pass, there's a lot of bridges that these trucks would not be allowed on. So it would still be an uphill battle whether we raise the limits or not because of the conditions our bridges are in. I just want to remind folks that the permit fees from this do go to bridge inspections. So it's above and beyond that. I don't quite answer your question directly.
Madam Chair,
Beard.
I think Representative Hort's heading in the direction. Perhaps the commissioner can clarify for the committee a little further that there actually is an axle weight and a gross weight, and the trucks that are running now actually have to comply with existing bridge postings, don't they, Commissioner?
Commissioner Milushnik.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Beard, that's correct. They have to do that. Our problem is, if I may add to this, is there's really, I have not seen, and I've been as recently as last week with the National Association of County Engineers in Washington, D.C., there is no real science about the weight on the bridges. And yes, we do permit, but there's situations where there's not always enforcement in place and those kinds of situations. I think the other side talked very much about additional bridge inspectors. We'd love to have that. Mm-hmm. But again, that might not, once a bridge is somehow structurally deficient, maybe the inspector's there a little bit late. That didn't seem to do much for the bridge that structurally failed here in Minnesota, Representative. So,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Beard.
You know, we keep bringing up the bridge that fell, which had nothing to do with truck weights and everything to do with piling 300,000 pounds of gravel on a gusset plate that was actually misapplied 60 years ago, 40 years ago, something like that. So if we could drop that one, that would be a good deal. I'm more interested in the farm bridges on the township roads that are collapsing under heavy husbandry equipment or things like that. That is a real issue we can talk about. But at some point, we kind of got to recognize the NTSB actually gave us an accident report, told us exactly what happened and how that happened, and it didn't happen because of heavy trucks. So please, folks, if just all of us can let that go, I think that would be good for the debate around here on all these other issues. Just on this matter, though, I just wanted to be clear. that currently we do permit trucks, and they're not allowed to run willy-nilly. They actually have routes that they can run at those weights. And just for the sake of the argument, I just want to get that on the table, that we understand that that's what this bill would do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to correct the record because you stated that Wright County was on this letter. They are not.
I believe not. I believe
you did state Chair, Wright County. I heard that very clearly, that you said Wright County, which I represent.
Hennepin, Houston County, Clay County, Anoka, and Redwood.
I'm pretty sure you said right, but I'd like to correct the record. Wright County is not on this letter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for thank you for your testimony.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Okay. Thank you, members.
Ed Reynoso. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. And just let me preface by stating to Representative Beard that I promise I will not cite anything about I-35.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Edward Reynoso, and I represent Teamsters Joint Council 32 and its 62,000-plus members in the state of Minnesota. I thank you for this opportunity to address our serious concerns and opposition regarding House File 1480. While you've heard testimony by various groups and organizations regarding their support for increased truck weights, make no mistake that my organization is the only one which takes both the driver and the general public safety in mind. We truly are the voice for all unionized and non-unionized truck drivers across Minnesota and our country. You've also heard from various company management and executives. Mind you, they are not the professionals that will be required, not asked, but required to drive these unsafe vehicles. For years, the Teamsters Union has been an advocate in many times alongside employers, as you've heard before from the previous testifiers, to strive for safer working conditions and practices which not only benefit our members but the general public at hand. We feel that our advocacy for safety on the road is imperative. It's not an option. With regards to the safety issues that were addressed by the groups before, I can tell you that without concrete evidence and proof, we are reluctant to support any notion that driving these proposed overweight trucks will be safe. In our opinion, we've yet to see evidence which takes into consideration the opinions of professional drivers which will be driving these vehicles. As a matter of fact, the MnDOT study provides a list of stakeholders cited by many of the proponents. They had various work groups in this study, yet not one labor union was invited to participate. We strongly and emphatically disagree with the testimony you heard earlier that driving these trucks on our highways is safe. We believe that it not only puts our members at risk of serious injury, but also your families, which will be driving on these same exact roads at the same exact time. We disagree that stopping time and distance will be better for these heavier trucks and that the risk of rollovers will decrease. To the contrary, imagine you and your family are in a car right in front of one of these overweight trucks on an icy, snowy, regular Minnesota winter day. And you are both required to come to a sudden stop. God forbid that this situation would happen to one of you. But I can tell you that it is inevitable that it will happen to one, if not many, of our fellow Minnesotans. The USDOT study, as you've heard, will be released this fall. A comprehensive study this November, which will provide not only us as an organization, but policymakers and lawmakers information that will allow us all the ability for an educated decision. We ask and plead that you strongly consider not making any changes until this report is released. I thank you for your time, and I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, just clarification. I think I heard, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think I heard you say that you're the only entity that represents the drivers or promotes driver safety. Are you? Am I to believe that police officers don't care about driver safety? And maybe you're not the one to comment on that. Maybe we need to bring the officer up. That's number one, if you can clarify on for that, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Reynoso.
Representative, we are the only labor union that represents workers. Mm-hmm. and both non-union and union.
Okay. And Madam Chair, well, thank you for that.
I
must have misheard, because I think that the police officers that were testifying also are concerned with driver safety as well. My question is, I believe that Teamsters drive trucks in the states that have heavier weight limits. One, is that accurate? And two, are those trucks left safe? And if so, do you have any evidence that supports that claim?
Mr. Reynoso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're absolutely right, Representative, that we do have Teamsters nationwide, and we, in every situation, we've opposed the increase of trucks. Do I believe that those trucks are less safe than the trucks we have in the state of Minnesota? Absolutely. As far as evidence with regards to whether they're safe or not, I think without seeing the study, the comprehensive study that the USDOT will release, I don't think any of us really know the concrete evidence as far as whether they're safe or not until we see that study.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, earlier we heard from a contractor from Grand Rapids that told us a story about having 20 trucks on the road and proposing to increase his numbers to 28 because of the volume of work he's expected, and I imagine he bid. These are, you know, good paying jobs up there and throughout the state. And I'm just wondering, with the added weights, potential for eliminating some of those trucks and some of those good jobs, we're bypassing some of these good jobs. If we increase the weight limits by 10%, are we eliminating 10% of these potential jobs, or 20%? Could you comment on that?
Representative Reynoso. Oh, excuse me. Didn't want to give you a demotion there. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, yeah. I can tell you that without any doubt whatsoever, our first and foremost important thing is to make sure that our members are safe and that the general public is safe. As I said in my testimony, it's imperative. It's not an option. We are extremely concerned with the safety of our members. Now, with that being said, we are also concerned with the potential loss of jobs. It's certainly an issue that we've addressed before. And, you know, as a matter of fact, in the study itself, the MnDOT study itself, In the portion that says expected outcomes and impacts, it says increased payloads and fewer truck trips will lower transport costs significantly. That means that there's going to be less jobs. There's going to be less trucks needed to transport the same amount of material. Unfortunately, at the expense of safety, we feel.
Okay.
May I answer to that also, Chair and Committee? I'm the contractor you were referring to.
Is it Representative Sundin? Would that be? Would you right. like it?
Yes, thank
okay.
you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. State your name for the record, please.
Again, I'm Paul Hawkinson from Grand Rapids. The way I understand it is the pie wouldn't shrink. We would get more work done.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for your testimony today, Mr. Reynoso.
Thank you.
Right, Tina Rydberg. Oh, excuse me. Okay, just a minute. I just realized I forgot Representative Benson. Mr. Reynoso, we may have another question for you. Sorry about that, Representative Benson.
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that gets to the heart of it, and I'm glad that Representative Sundin brought it up, because I think it's as much about that as it is about safety, because the testifier, Mr. Reynoso, you really never answered the question about it. It's one thing to be passionate about safety, and I'm glad you are. You should be, the people that you represent, but you provide no facts to this committee that really indicate. We've got lots of experience with the exceptions in Minnesota that refute what you just said in your testimony, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe the representative bringing the bill here today will in his closing remarks even address those facts. I'm glad he is a numbers wonk, so am I, and I think those speak volumes. you know, in terms of where we need to go with this bill. And I think it's as much about, in your testimony, is about the jobs. But the conflict with that is in our packets, we have a handout, and all of you should know, Coalition Against Bigger Trucks, that said bigger trucks is equal to nearly 8 million more trucks. So, I mean, can we have it both ways? I don't think so. It either is or it isn't. But, in fact, what we've heard from after testimony from the people who own and operate these trucks, how much more efficient it would be. And from a state's perspective, when we look at the kind of work that needs to get done, this committee is about trying to improve the roads in the state of Minnesota. And if we can do it more efficient and an effective cost and still maintain safe roads, this is a slam dunk. I'm ready to vote on this bill today. Unfortunately, it's going to be laid over. And I think it's one of those whose time has come, and it should be about the facts, not a passionate plea to understand my point of view when you don't have any. So that's a statement, I suppose, more than it is a question.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mahoney?
Madam Chair, may I respond to that?
Sure, briefly? Mr. Reynoso.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Well, you know, you've heard throughout the day, throughout this testimony today by the proponents, citing various issues with regards to the MnDOT study. Now, what I want to make absolutely clear is that you can't just pick out what's good and supports your views. And I'm not saying you personally, but there is evidence provided in that study that specifically cites the reduction of trucks on the road. I believe it's page 11, that actually shows a graph in the drop of jobs, the drop of trucks that will be on the road. So if you have less trucks, naturally you're going to have less drivers.
Okay, Representative Mahoney, this will be our last question before we move to Ms. Rydberg.
Well, it's not actually a question. It's somewhat of a statement. If I remember the police officer's testimony, he said in today's world we have 17 out of 100 trucks have subpar brakes. And I don't understand, nor do I see the facts, that having a larger truck with one more axle, I'm going to get 100% compliance with regulations. Now, I understand regulations are tough. You got to figure out how to make them happen. But maybe that's a fact that should come up, that, you know, they're going to have 100% brakes that will stop them within whatever the, you know, my memory's going bad at my age. How long it's going to take to stop a 99,000-pound truck versus an 80,000-pound truck. So until I'm going to get 100%, I'm kind of reluctant on this one. I'm a little worried about that because I'm troubled enough with 80,000 pounds behind me. I'm feel a little bit, but 20% more worried with another 19,000 pounds. Just a statement. No need to answer.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony again.
Absolutely.
We, members, we've done very well today, and the testifiers, thank you. We have one more testimony on the list, and that is Ms. Rydberg. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Tina Rydberg, and I'm an administrative manager at Twin Cities and Western Railroad. I'm here on behalf of Mark Wegner, who's the president of the Twin Cities and Western Railroad and president of the Minnesota Regional Railroad Association. And I've asked John Appice to join me here this morning as well. He represents the association here at the Capitol. I'm not a lobbyist. This is my first time testifying, so please bear with me.
That's okay. We eat the testifiers.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Proceed.
And the reason why I'm here testifying in opposition today is this is really an economic issue for us short line railroads here in Minnesota. Like many small businesses in Minnesota, we operate on small profit margins. We are not one of the large Class 1 railroads. We are the small railroads that haul our grain, our corn, our soybeans, our ethanol to the ports and connect us to the large Class 1 carriers. Increasing truck size and weights would divert freight traffic from our railroads to the state's highways, counties, roads, and bridges. For us, this is an economic issue, and allowing bigger trucks would cripple many of Minnesota's short line and regional railroads. To give you a glimpse of the sensitivity in the grain market, a penny a bushel advantage that increasing the truck size and weights would be enough to divert freight from our railroad to trucks. In 2010, when they issued the weight increases for the raw and unprocessed agricultural products, our shipments of those products had decreased 35%. Our revenue decreased 30%. So the freight traffic that is being diverted to these bigger trucks is handled by our short lines. Allowing bigger trucks on Minnesota roads means less freight shipped by our rail. This leads directly to reduced revenue, reduced rail capacity. We'll have less money to invest in our infrastructure, less money to retain our employees, less money to contribute to running our operations. It would no longer make us competitive. Freight that moves to these bigger trucks puts us out of business. So on behalf of the short line railroads in Minnesota, we oppose legislation that would increase truck size and weights allowed on Minnesota roads. And I bet Mr. Appitz here has a couple of words to say as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good job, Mr. Ryberg, for Ms. Ryberg, for your first time. Thank you. And Mr. Appitz, we have 2 minutes left for you to finish the testimony.
I understand, Madam Chair, and I'll be very brief. Thank you ever so much. My name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and as Ms. Ryberg indicated, I do represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association here in Minnesota, the short line railroads, of which there are 14, count them, 14, 15 back and forth in Minnesota. You've heard my shtick year after year, and I just want to say I tried to improve it this year by having Ms. Ryberg here. She works for and runs a railroad, and that's why she's here, because she wants to continue working for and running a railroad. And President Wagner couldn't be with us today. He's in Washington trying to do the very same thing. Let me just go through a couple of things. It is true that bigger trucks do more damage to the roads. It is true. That is a fact, and we've seen the evidence of that in various places. The MnDOT study did not address the issue of bridges. Let's not talk about the 35W bridge. It did not address the issue of weight on bridges. But if you want to find out what's happening to our bridges, take a look at the Star Tribune from last week when it said, over the last decade, the number of structurally deficient and functionally obsolete, and I know this doesn't mean they're falling down, but it does mean they're in trouble. The number of bridges in Minnesota that have become functionally obsolete or structurally deficient has gone from 7.7% to 11%. And it found that 5 of 7 worst-rated counties are outstate, and more than 1 in 5 spans fall into those two categories. Let me just quote this real quickly. Many of the troubled bridges are either made of timber, dating to the mid-1900s, and fall under the control of smaller counties and townships. MnDOT estimates that there are 1,528 timber bridges statewide, more than one-fifth of what are structurally deficient. Think about that for just a minute. It's also true that trucks only pay a portion of the cost of the damage that they do to the roads. They pay for about 80% of the damage that they do to the roads. Bigger trucks pay about half of the cost of the damage that they do to the roads. 15 seconds?
Okay.
All right. I heard somebody say this was a no-cost benefit to the folks who testified in favor of this. Well, there is a cost to it, and the cost will be borne by the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. The cost will be borne by others who are going to pay for the bridges and the roads. There's lots of information here. If you want to read it, do read it. Take a look at it. We all gather our stuff up together, but I know you've heard this in the past. This is some new and valuable information. Please take a look at this study that was done a few years ago by a gentleman out of MIT estimating the economic cost of larger trucks on rail freight movements. That's the reason we're sitting here. You can do what you want to your roads, but don't do this to the small railroads, okay? You move you increase the size of trucks, you move freight off the railroads onto the roads. That has an impact on Ms. Ryberg and all the rest of the short lines in the state.
Thank you very much. Okay, it's 1:45. We promised to get out of here at this time. Representative Hamilton, if you can be brief, and then we'll give the closing remarks to Representative Dorholt.
Thank you. And just, I read the study, the methodology developed by MIT and for the International Railway Congress. And your concern, it says railways would be able to respond to larger trucks by reducing their rates, improving their services, introducing better equipment, or improving productivity. Your thoughts to their conclusion, their statement.
Okay, I'm going to have to end this hearing, so if you can answer it in 5 seconds, I guess that's what we can do. I apologize, because Representative Beard, I did promise him to be able to ask a quick question here.
I think the remainder of that statement was, and will impact the profitability of short line railroads that have to do these sorts of things.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Beard?
Yeah, just a comment. It's not even a question. Madam Chair, I've been on this bill. I've been against this bill. I've been for it. I've been all over the map on this in 12 years. I'm on it this year because I'm hoping we have this discussion, but the reason that gives me pause is exactly what Ms. Ryberg just talked about. We spent a lot of time, a lot of money trying to save the branch lines that have been torn up and abandoned all over the state. I do know that North Dakota and South Dakota are continuing to have heavier trucks and preserve their short lines, so I hope that we find that magic formula somewhere where we can accomplish both purposes. That's my fond hope. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Dorholt, your final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're all concerned about bridges. We're all concerned about jobs. You heard conflicting arguments about both. I think a larger load would be dropped off with the short lines. Unfortunately, they don't run everywhere where these trucks need to go. Past 4 years, about 7,000 permit applications, $625 a piece. That's over $4 million in revenue for the state. $4 million used to inspect the bridges that we all agree have a problem. But these trucks will not be driving over them. I appreciate members pointing out the facts of the study that's now 8 years old. Technology has improved vastly. This represents a significant change. You can't have change without anxiety. So I ask everybody who's opposed, just read these 198 pages or swing by my office. Thank you very much for having this hearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dorholt. We'll be laying over House File 1480. Thank you all for coming and testifying. The meeting is now adjourned.